Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is sports bettor and contributor on the Gambling with an Edge part of the Las Vegas Advisor page, Captain Jack Andrews. Captain Jack, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, Bob and Richard. It's a pleasure to be here with you once again.
Thank you. All of a sudden, it seems like you've created quite a bit of information on YouTube. It seems like any questions I ask you will lead to several different answers. So pacing it your own way, take 10 or so minutes covering the following questions. What is the information all about? Who is it addressed to? How much does a subscription cost at this point? How often are you posting videos? Do you have a vision as to how many you're going to create? Do you intend to put any of these videos behind a paywall at some point? That's enough for now. Go!
All right. So when we're recording this, we're in the midst of the pandemic. And this was sort of the impetus that I needed to get off my butt when it came to making these videos. About a year and a half ago, I had this idea that the level of educational content available for sports betting on YouTube was very low. If you were to go onto YouTube, you search for sports betting, you find people trying to sell you picks, you find people that are talking about games that happened 3 years ago. It's not evergreen content there sometimes on YouTube. And sometimes you find just really bad advice. So I decided, okay, I can put some content out there. And my original plan was I'll do it anonymously. I'll just, you know, throw up some things there with some slideshows and, you know, help the community out. And I kind of sat on this for a while. And I remember I talked to, Colin Jones from Blackjack Apprenticeship, talked to him a few times about this. And he was always encouraging me, just put something up there, just put it up there. And I didn't. And so I saw him again in February, and he said, hey, where's that content, man? You got to put that up there. It's going to be good stuff. So then the pandemic hit, right? And I'm stuck at home, and I realized to myself, I'm not going to be going back to casinos anytime soon. Is it really that big of a deal to put my face up there? Let's get past that hurdle. And I said, you know what? Let me try to just put some content up there. I'll just turn on the camera and put it up there. And then I started hearing about Zoom, right? And everybody's talking about Zoom and these Zoom chats and everything. And I looked into Zoom and I realized I could do a webcast. I could just basically pick a time, turn this on, cast it up onto Zoom, and then simulcast it to YouTube. That was kind of the perfect storm for me, because now I had no reason not to do it, and I had a deadline that I had to meet to just turn on the camera and go live at, you know, a set time. So that's what I did, and it was well received. And I started to think about, you know, making pre-recorded videos as well. And I, you know, because I feel like there's part of the problem when it comes to YouTube content is if your quality of content is really poor, people just turn it off and never look at it again. So I needed to raise the bar in terms of sports betting content on YouTube to be a little bit more, have higher production quality. So I created a YouTube channel. I started doing a live broadcast on Fridays. It's Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern time, and I pick a topic, and I do basically a 20 to 30 minute presentation, complete with slides and visuals, and then there's an open-ended Q&A for the remainder of the hour, and it's been well-received. We get about 50 to 100 people in the Zoom chat room, and then we get another 50 to 100 that are watching live on YouTube. The questions come from all over. They're, you know, and I'm an open book. I'll let anybody ask any question they want. And it's going pretty well. We're getting more people watching on YouTube. I have no plans to charge any money for this. There's no subscription cost. There's really no monetization in it for me. In fact, given the amount of time it takes to make one of these pre-recorded videos that I do, there's certainly a negative EV. But at this point, during this pandemic, I'm not generating EV anywhere, so I've got all the time in the world to devote to this. When things get back to normal in the world, I'll have to make some decisions as to the frequency that I post things and how I go about it, because it's, you know, I made a 15-minute video called Making a Modeler. It was kind of a takeoff on the the Netflix series Making a Murderer. I even had a nice cool graphic. And that 15-minute video took me 40 hours of actual work to put together.
Yow.
Recording, re-recording, editing, taking out every little and which I wish I could do on podcasts because I feel like I do a lot of and ums, but I think we all do. And anyway, it took just so long to edit this down that I'm not sure I could ever do that and bet sports full time. But at the same time, I like where this is going. I really like the feeling it gives me when I make this content and put it out there. I like hearing people say, this really helped me. This took the intimidation out of sports betting for me. That's a great compliment, and I hope to do more of it.
You know, you mentioned that there wasn't really any good content on YouTube. There really isn't any good content, period. I mean, when we talk to people on the show about where can people get information, they're still talking about Wong Sharp Sports Betting, which is, what, 25 years old? I don't even know how many years old it is, but it's really old. I mean, there definitely is a market out there. I mean, there are people who want it, and I'm sure this will continue to grow a lot.
So here's the thing, Richard, is not only is there old content that's out there, and Wong's book is still valid. I mean, I still refer some people to it because there are chapters in that book that just lead you down the right path when it comes to sports betting. But a lot of the content that's out there, guys, is encouraging you to bet in very undisciplined ways, you know, especially the entertainment level content. So we all know of the Barstools and the Action Network and things like that. That are making this kind of like everybody's a sports bettor and we all just bet recklessly and we have fun with it and we blow our money. But I don't think that's good for the future of the industry. You know, we talk a lot about right now about flattening the curve. Well, I think we need to flatten the curve of people's bankrolls when it comes to sports betting because a lot of people storm into sports betting and they get tricked into making these 5-10 team parlays thinking this is a new form of lottery. That they can just, you know, bet a little and win a lot. And they make these reckless plays. They chase their bets. They come into some really undisciplined ways of proceeding into the market and they flame out. They just get tired of losing and they do it so quickly that they're done with it. If we, you know, and to steal that phrase again, to flatten the curve, if we level their expectations out and we teach them ways to trim the house edge and we teach them ways to be a smarter bettor, we're doing everybody a service because we're raising the liquidity of the market because there's going to be more money longer term in the market. And that's good for sharp bettors like me. That's good for the public bettors that probably aren't going to win long term. It's good for the sports books because their market lasts longer. And it's good for the states because the tax revenue has a longer base to it. And they also are probably going to be spending less on problem gambling programs that result from people making irresponsible bets. So I feel like it's a sustainable market. I'm helping to raise the tide that lifts all boats. And I hope it does take off because, you know, that would be good for everyone.
You know, years ago, we were talking a lot about how the new players in daily fantasy just didn't have a chance because A, the rake was big and the skill factor was so big that the pros were just, you know, vacuuming up the money out of daily fantasy sports. I haven't followed it since then. Did the number of players drop off because they were just getting gutted? What happened with daily fantasy?
It's still the same, Richard. It's still the top 5% of players win 95% of the money. There's very little sharing of the wealth when it comes to DFS. It's a wealth disparity in the market.
And because of that, did the number of players drop off? Is the market smaller now?
What we see is a lot of people get just fed up with daily fantasy. They know they can't win, and so they'll do it for a couple weeks, and then it drops off. You can see that in the NFL season. The first 2, 3, 4 weeks of the NFL season, there's always a ton of people in all of these contests on these DFS sites. And as you get into weeks 10 through 17, it trails off and there's fewer contests available. Now, is there always an amount of Square money into that market coming in? New square money? Yes, there is. You know, the age for daily fantasy in most of the country is 18. So you get a lot of 18-year-olds, and this is the only form of gambling they can get. And it's, you know, that's a little bit scary, right? That we're seeing that where we're letting 18 to 21-year-olds kind of get their taste of sports betting, and it's this product that they're not going to win at, and they're just going to get eaten alive by the sharks.
In video poker, when I have, through my teaching, I have eliminated a lot of people from making bad bets. And the net effect is casinos have tightened up the machines or restricted something or changed the promotions because the casinos have to make their money somewhere. Are you worried about the same kind of thing happening to you, that you'll have enough influence that you're taking away a lot of the suckers, and so the minus 110 is going to become minus 112 everywhere?
So, Bob, there's always going to be greed in the casino industry, whether it's the sports book operators or casino operators. They're always going to be looking to get a little bit more of their pound of flesh. Now, when you take a minus 110 line, you are dealing basically a 4.5% theoretical hold. You know, look, the listeners to this podcast are all very sharp gamblers or want to be sharp gamblers. They recognize that blackjack is a 0.5% if played with just basic strategy. They recognize that roulette is about a 5% house edge. So you're talking a sports betting product that's closer to roulette than to blackjack, and yet we still want to find a way to beat it. So there's always going to be sports books that are wanting to take a little bit more. They want to push minus 115 on you when they could really do minus 110. But the bottom line is their edge when it comes to sports betting is a healthy 5%. And considering people never really play adequately with their bankrolls, it drifts upwards from there because they, you know, they tap out before they get into the long run. So really what we see is that sports books hold organically about 5 to 8%. Sometimes upwards of 10% per month. And they do this without ever having to worry about sharp bettors or, you know, encouraging the public to make bad bets. It's a product that can sustain them, sports betting is, if they do it correctly. Now, a lot of these sports books around the country that have popped up in the past 2 years are going crazy with promotions, right? They're giving away the store with marketing because they want to get a bigger customer base. So, if anything, you know, they're going to trim back from this extensive marketing in order to get some of their funds back, rather than try to push out a product that's not competitive with their neighbors there in the industry.
Can you tell us again where or how do we get onto your podcast or your Zoomcast? I have a feeling that after we air, you're going to have more people in the audience.
Okay, so the easiest way to find out where I will be broadcasting is to follow me on Twitter, and that is at CapJack2000. It looks a little funny to have 2000 in your name these days, but when I started to use that as a moniker, it was back in the late 90s. So that's CapJack2000.
And you're behind the times.
Yeah. And each Monday, I post what the topic will be of the webcast that is on the upcoming Friday. I post the link to Zoom where you can register to watch it in Zoom. And Zoom affords you to be a little bit more interactive with me. You can resize my picture on the screen if you wanted to see more of me or, you know, less of the presentation. You can submit questions that get queued up and popped up to me. And we even do a thing where you can ask an audio question. I'll enable the audio on your side, and it's like sports talk call-in radio. You can ask your question live on the air. Now, if you're not comfortable with using Zoom, if you don't want to submit your email address into Zoom, I don't do anything with email addresses, by the way, that people have to register with. But if you're not comfortable with that, you can watch on YouTube. And also on that tweet each Monday, I list where on YouTube it'll be. And it's always on my channel, which is on YouTube. You can search for Captain Jack Andrews on YouTube. And if you subscribe to my channel and you set the notification bell, you'll be alerted every time I go live. So you don't even have to worry about, you know, looking on Twitter. You can just know that each week On Friday, you're going to get a little pop-up that says, hey, Captain Jack's live. Go check him out.
I saw you mention on somewhere, maybe on Twitter, that you get a lot of industry people watching your show or paying attention to what you're doing. How is that working out for you?
You know, Richard, that's a really good side effect that I didn't anticipate when I decided to kind of up my social media presence a while back. I didn't realize that the industry pays such close attention to social media. And I get a lot of feedback on the down low from company presidents, CEOs, managers, clerks that work the lines, traders that are, you know, trading risk for these companies, because they recognize that I know what I'm talking about and I'm taking a fair and balanced view towards it. You know, a lot of what's online, especially when it comes to gambling Twitter, is very caustic. It's very, they just want to rage and hate, right? I like to take a more balanced approach. If someone's doing good, I want to talk about it. If someone's doing bad, I want to talk about it. But I want to take a balanced approach where, you know, I can say in one tweet that, you know, it's not right of William Hill, for instance, to kick winning bettors out. But then if William Hill puts up a, you know, some kind of post about responsible gaming, I'm going to applaud it because I think we need more responsible gaming in this industry. You know, if William Hill sets lines on something that nobody else has and they're taking that approach of, you know, we'll be first to market with this, I'm going to say good things about it. So as a result, I get a lot of people that reach out to me from these companies. They give me information. You know, a lot of times it's they don't want to be named as a source, but they'll give me information on where the industry's headed in various states. It's worked out really good for me in terms of gathering information that I can then put out there to kind of foster my following on social media.
So you did a session with Rufus Peabody and Spanky, kind of a three-way group chat. How did that come about, and how was the – I mean, I would think the response to that must have been really positive.
That is my most watched video by far, and it was 90 minutes long, and YouTube allows you to kind of track all these stats, and the amount of time that that video engages people. In other words, people just keep watching it. Even though it's 90 minutes long, they keep watching it, and I made a timeline in there so you can skip around to the various questions that were asked. But Rufus and Spanky are good friends of mine. And I just said, you know, hey, guys, you want to do a happy hour where we each have a beverage of our choice and we sit there in a Zoom chat. People can log in, watch on YouTube and engage us with questions. Because, look, you know, Rufus and Spanky are two of the best at what they do. They are, you know, it's hard to put it in words, a comparison. But, you know, if back in the 1960s, somebody decided, hey, you know what, Bob Dylan and John Lennon, and Mick Jagger, why don't you kind of all get together on the Zoom chat and just hang out and answer questions? Well, how great would that video be to have for future generations?
Yeah.
And that's how I pitched it to them. I said, look, this could be something that future generations look at and go, wow, look at those two guys hanging out, talking questions, doing, you know, we all have time in the world right now. So it turned out really well. I'm going to do it again, actually, this coming Friday, May 15th. And this time I'm going to have Ed Miller and Matthew David Al. They've been on your show.
Yes.
They are tremendous guys that have they wrote the book Logic of Sports Betting, which is the best book on sports betting that's out there these days. They have an extreme knowledge. And not only that, but then the in-game product. They have Deck Prism Sports, which is a in-game algorithm for operators to use. It's fascinating to know more about that and how that works and how that all ties together. And, you know, I'm looking forward to asking them some questions about in-game betting, especially Matt. Matt's not real active on social media, and it'll be cool to kind of see what kind of questions he answers for us.
Now, they were giving away their in-game data, right? Because in an effort, I guess, to let books know that their data was better than – I mean, their lines were better than the book's lines. Are they still giving that away, and have you taken advantage of that?
So, yeah, on their website, they had the ability to – certain games each week, you could check their in-game algorithm, and they kept expanding that. Like, at first, it was only during commercial breaks and halftime, and then they expanded that so it's pretty much a live line all the time. It was really fascinating, and I noticed that the industry sharpened up as a result of that. And I believe they are going to be providing some that metric, that algorithm, to certain operators around the country in the coming year. And it was fascinating, and from what I saw, it was profitable for those that followed it.
All right. We are going to take a brief commercial break. We're talking with Captain Jack Andrews about sports. And the first question we're going to ask him after we get back is, why does he use a black man as an icon for his videos, when Captain Jack himself, who appears on the videos, is a middle-aged white guy? We'll be back. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. At least they will when they open up again. It's closed now, along with all other casinos in Nevada and elsewhere. We do not know when they're going to open. Part of that is up to the governor for the initial time, and then each casino operator can choose to go with that initial opening or wait further should it want to. I suspect my free video poker classes in the fall will be canceled this year, and we will start again in January. I don't know that for sure, but that's my anticipation. At predicted.org, there's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. An interesting case for arbitrage as we go to press. We're taping this on May 9th. You can vote for the Trump is the favorite for president over Joe Biden, 50 cents to 43 cents, where the markets sum up to a dollar. But in terms of the Electoral College vote, the Democrats are ahead in that vote. So something in there is wrong. There is room for arbitrage should you figure out, should your predictor be better than the public's, because it cannot both be that Trump wins and he loses the Electoral College vote. So something is fishy there. So it's up to you to figure out what it is and take advantage of it. Gambling with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. BlackjackApprenticeship.com is an excellent site for those of you who wish to become successful at counting cards at blackjack. Colin Jones, who we also mentioned earlier in today's show, is regularly producing a number of YouTube videos that are free to everybody for a week or two, and then go into the members' vault, which are accessible only if you have a subscription. Until recently, they were scheduling to have a blackjack boot camp the last weekend in May. That's postponed 2 weeks, so it is currently June 13th to 14th. There may be a couple spots available, assuming that they're allowed to have it. And there are a few spots also for July 25th to 26th boot camp. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Triple Play Dream Card. Dream Card is a 10-coin per line game where periodically receive a dream card, which is substituted for the best available card before the draw. There's no special strategy required, and the feature adds EV over whatever the base game is. There are two versions of Dream Card out there. One of the dream cards, you get frequent dream cards. The other, you get infrequent. But when you get the dream card on the second version, the machine deals three cards, three hands in the background, and gives you the highest one. So they come out to be about the same, but one is done more using hocus pocus, and the other one is done just straight up. So, but they both come out the same, and you can find out which is which by looking for the frequency of dream cards on the help screen. We're back to Captain Jack. Now, when I saw your YouTube video, which features your face on it because it's a video, the icon for it was this young, good-looking black guy, much better looking than you, although I don't want to get in a fight with your wife on that. So how did you pick that icon for you?
So back in 1999, I signed up for this little website called BJ21. Many of your listeners are familiar with that. Many of them are probably friends of mine from that website. I'm still a member there. So at BJ21, you had to use an alias. Now, I was fairly young. I didn't realize that I would need to use an alias. So I just thought for about 10 seconds, and I was thinking, Black Jack? What kind of Jack? And so I, at the time, I was a Billy Joel fan, and I said Captain Jack. And I wrote Captain Jack there in the form to sign up. And it stuck. And that's been my name online in various forums for 20-plus years. So when it came time to start going on forums that had an avatar, a little icon of yourself, I Googled Captain Jack. And, of course, I get, the Pirates of the Caribbean, Johnny Depp's character, and I kept scrolling down further and further. I was actually looking for the cover of the Billy Joel album. Couldn't find that, but I did come across this black guy in a military costume, and there was a lot of pictures of him. And so I figured out who he was. He's a rapper from Germany. He did techno music in the 90s. He was sort of popular in Germany, and he was popular in the Caribbean, actually. So I figured, well, this kind of works. I can kind of look at all these pictures of this guy. I can have different pictures for different moods and, put them up there. And I thought it was a good inside joke for me to have. And, well, that stuck for another 10-plus years. So it wasn't until I did the YouTube channel that I actually decided to drop my veil of anonymity. But that's the frequent question I get is, where did that guy come from that's in your avatar?
So his rapper name was Captain Jack?
Yes. Yeah, and if you Google Captain Jack rapper, you'll see his work and his videos. And yeah, it's pretty comical. But the number one comment I get on the videos is, I can't believe that's not you in the avatar.
Well, it sounds like you took as much time picking your name of Captain Jack as I did picking Bob Dancer. So, and it stuck too. You mentioned Rufus Peabody. You, Rufus, and ABC. It sounds like a song title. Maybe one Captain Jack would be interested in recording. And a comeback. What is ABC all about?
So ABC is the American Betters Coalition. Rufus and I are, as I mentioned before, we're friends, and we actually independently of each other had this idea in our head for a while of the American bettor needs a voice. We started to see what was going to happen with the American legal betting landscape. In fact, I was on your podcast back in June of 2018. You had me on as well as Frank and Anthony and a couple other people, and we were all kind of talking about what was to come with legal sports betting. And we all had kind of a negative view of it because we're like, it's not going to be good for the consumer. These companies are going to be monopolistic in the way they approach this realm. And we've seen some of that. We've seen that in certain states. And we've seen other states where it's a very competitive product and the rich competition leads to innovation and capitalism and the consumer benefits. So fast forward a few more years, and Rufus and I each independently have this idea that the American bettor needs to have a voice. We see these states that are legalizing sports betting, and they hold these hearings, and they hear from the operators, and they hear from the anti-gambling people, and they hear from the casino companies, but they don't hear from the consumer. And they need to hear from the consumer because there are things that sports betting industry can do to make their product more attractive to consumers. And likewise, there's things that states can do to ensure that the consumer has protection in this industry. So Rufus and I got together with another guy, Alfonso Straffen, and we decided to form this coalition. And we looked into the nonprofit side of things, and we had some lawyers step up and say, hey, I'll do all this work pro bono because I believe in this too. And it snowballed from there. And so we have an initial board of directors. We're creating a charter, and we're filing for our nonprofit status. And we had planned to have this grand launch at the ICE North America Conference in New Orleans in mid-May. It'll actually be next week in May 2020 here. And then the pandemic hit. And pretty quickly, we realized that everything is slowing down. And including slowing down is funding for nonprofit organizations such as this. You know, we've talked to some people that run nonprofits for other things such as problem gaming, and they're seeing their funding drying up. You know, we had hoped to be an organization that could attract funding from everyone, not only consumers, but also from operators, because what we're preaching is a more sustainable product that is good for operators. I kind of explained earlier in the podcast that sustainable sports betting is good for everyone. And so we thought, you know, hopefully we can get some funding from everyone and we can get a seat at the table when it comes to, you know, legislative hearings or in terms of what consumers see in this industry. So the pandemic hits, we're running, you know, we've taken our foot off the gas pedal, so to speak. And we actually just put out a notice the other day to our followers on Twitter at American Better is the Twitter handle for the American Betters Coalition. And we put out a message and we basically said, you know, look, given the situation of things, we're going to be a little bit more grassroots for the time being. It's still Rufus and I and Alfonso. We're strongly behind this. We still do a lot of what we can to call out situations that need to be called out. We take a lot of DMs from people that feel they've been wronged by sports betting operators. In many cases, they might not just understand the rules of the operator, and we explain that to them. Or in some cases, we take their case to the operator, and we say, you know, look, we feel there should be a better way to do this. Oftentimes, they see it our way. We're fair and balanced. So hopefully, we're going to grow this forward. Once we come out of this, we're back to normal. We can get back to a world that the consumer protection advocacy group thrives, and the American Betters Coalition will be a force to reckon with. So we're at AmericanBetterscoalition.org if they want to check out our website, or at American Better on Twitter.
And we'll put links to both those in the show notes. So when you say you get involved with the operators when there's a problem, are you talking about just the legal operators in the states that have passed it, or do you get involved in, you know, offshore at all?
Just the legal operators, Richard. We've drawn that line right now just because there are actually some places people can go with offshore operators if they have disagreements. But the offshore industry is just the Wild West. You know, when you come to a legal industry and you have the regulations in place, the consumer feels more confidence, right? They feel protected. We're just kind of augmenting that protection for them and representing them to the operators, because we know we have the states to fall back on if we need to take it to that level and talk to them. But in every case we've had so far, a resolution has been met. Either it be the better understands the difference, or the operator says, okay, you know, we'll meet you here with this one.
All right. At this point, we are going to give you some sports questions. Since you take questions from anybody every Friday, I don't think we can throw you, and we're not trying to. But questions that many listeners might be interested in is, what is your prediction on whether or not the NFL will play a full schedule this year?
So the NFL did release a full schedule, and it's kind of interesting. What you can see that they're doing is they've built in a little breaks into the schedule, little quirks in the schedule, so that they can trim this season down if they want to. In week two, everyone's week two opponent is also shares a bye week with them. So in other words, they could move week two to be in the bye week of all the other teams. In weeks three and four, nobody plays a divisional opponent. So basically, we could forget about weeks three and four, and it wouldn't really affect the standings. And week one could be moved to the end of the season, and then they'd eliminate the Pro Bowl and still have the Super Bowl be on path for February 7th. So you see right there, we have the NFL could start in October, and we'd still have a 14-game schedule, and we'd still have the Super Bowl on schedule. So they put some thought into this. Now, hopefully, we can still have a season that starts on September 13th, I think it is, and, you know, have, even if we're without fans, we'd still have a good 17-week season. I think the bettors and the fans alike and Americans alike need that sense of normalcy back in their life.
I wanted to ask, of the younger or modern generation of sports bettors, you guys all seem to be friendly with each other, talk to each other, or at least a lot of you. Billy Walters, who's kind of this mythical figure in sports betting, just got out of prison. He's not part of that group. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about him. Do you know if he was still in the markets while he was in prison, or anything you might have to add about him?
Using the term mythical, describing Billy Walters is pretty accurate, Richard, because he is. He's very mythical when it comes to this industry. In that podcast I did with Rufus and Spanky, I asked the question, who would you want to have dinner with from this industry, living or dead? And they both said Billy Walters. You know, he's always cloaked himself in mystery a little bit and misdirection. Even the things that he put out there for the public, you know, there's a 60 Minutes interview. There was an ESPN interview. They were full of misdirection. You know, I won't get too far into that, but, you know, he's a guy that he knows all the angles, and he is going to play all the angles as he sees fit. Was he still in the market while in prison? I don't know. I do know that even people who are friends with him, he did not want to communicate with them while he was in prison. I know people that are personal friends with him that they sent notes asking if they could, you know, correspond. Never heard a response. So I don't feel like he was personally in the market, but will he get back into the market now out of prison? I think we'll be able to tell. You know, he always had such a strong influence on the market that we can tell within short time if he's back in the game. Of course, right now he's not back in the game because there's nothing, no games going on, but we'll be able to see down the line if he's back in it. And hey, if he ever wants to come on a YouTube Zoom chat and you know,
that would be
the
awesome.
Door's always open.
Yeah, he has a standing invitation for our show too. And so far, it's don't call us, we'll call you.
I think you have a better chance of getting Grosjean on your show.
Yeah, and Jelko.
There you go.
I do think we'll have Grosjean on the show. Jelko,
eventually.
I'm not so sure about.
Yeah, eventually, I think we will.
Yeah. When I heard you say eventually, I thought you said next week, and I was going, no, I don't think that. Now, playing football in empty stadiums, is that going to do away with home court advantage? Is there a home court advantage? How should bettors take that into consideration?
So with the release of the NFL schedule this week, we saw that bookmakers started to put out their lines. In fact, I think by middle of next week, we're going to have all 17 weeks of the NFL season, there's going to be lines out for all of them because that's just how people are so anxious to bet. So what we saw with a lot of the lines that came out is that a lot of the bookmakers are choosing to diminish the home field advantage with the NFL. The NFL home field advantage, it varies based on team and stadium, but largely it's about 2.5 to 3 points. We saw that it was more like 1 to 2 points is what a lot of the bookmakers were factoring in as home field advantage when it came to the lines. I think that's about accurate. The cool thing is, though, guys, is when you have a situation like this where we're all just sitting around thinking, we can do just that. We can think about variables that we might not think about in the fog of war. So I've been thinking a lot about, like, how will totals be influenced when it comes to empty stadiums? Well, you know, what do we see in a lot of games? We see that there's the crowd noise factors in and the offense jumps offsides or, you know, it does some kind of illegal movement. And that's an extra 5 yards that factors in sometimes. And I think we're going to see a lot of less penalties when it comes to the lack of crowd noise because the referees won't be influenced to throw a flag based on the crowd reaction. I think we're going to see that increases offense, but by the same respect, if we have a shortened preseason or we have no preseason, that affects offense more than it affects defense. So therefore, then that lowers the totals back down. So you see, there's all these different mitigating factors at work when it comes to what happens if. And, you know, one of the other ones I'll tell you about is, you know, if we have a shortened preseason and especially if there's shortened training camps, then these teams that have new coaches or new quarterbacks, they suffer. A team that has a you know, pre-existing quarterback and offensive scheme setup is going to benefit from not having as much time, you know, compared to some of the other teams. So look for teams that have new coaches and new quarterbacks and, you know, maybe fade against those teams.
Now, the that's a future bet. In general, future bets, you tend to discourage those because you have your money tied up for 6 months. Is a factor on this, you know, like fading the Bucks because Tom Brady is such a newcomer and he won't know anything about the offense other than Gronk, who may or may not be healthy. Is that worth keeping your money tied up for 6 months?
Well, you know, that's more of a personal decision that people need to decide, but they need to factor in the opportunity cost of any money they put into a sports book. The nice part about betting in legal markets in the U.S. is all of the states so far have clauses where your money is protected. In other words, your money is kept separate from the operating budgets of these companies. So if the company goes under, your money is safe. I was actually just surprised to learn that in the U.K., that's optional. Books don't have to protect your balance in England for betting. And, of course, offshore, you never know, right? So it's a personal choice for people. If they want to tie up their money, there is an opportunity cost there. They also need to definitely shop for the best line when it comes to looking at any kind of futures bet, because the hold generically on futures is typically around 20 to 25%. If you add up all the outcomes in a futures bet and tally it up, there's about a 20 to 25% margin baked in there. But if you shop around and you basically lower that synthetic hold, that's a term that Ed Miller and Matthew David Al kind of coined. If you lower that synthetic hold down, you come up with a slightly better bet, and that's a better way to invest your money into a futures bet. In general, though, Bob, no, I'm not a big fan of betting into futures, especially if you're betting into the high hold variety.
So your first five videos, Jack, were how players can bet smarter. So every week you took a different subject. So one of them is don't pay for picks. What were some of the other betting smarter hints that you gave?
Right. So a lot of the videos I decided to do were focused on taking the intimidation out of sports betting, but also focused on keeping people grounded in how they approach the topic of sports betting. And I kind of decided a good way to do this would be to just pick five things to talk about in each episode. So some of the titles that we've had in the past are five ways to trim the house edge. Now notice I didn't say five ways to beat the house. I said five ways to trim the house edge because I want to keep people realistic in their approach to sports betting. You know, the stats prove out that very few people beat sports long term. However, people can still find little niches when it comes to their approach to sports betting where they can kind of grind out some profit, or they can make it something that's very entertainable to them, very entertaining to them, rather, because there are very few bets you can make in a casino where you get 3 hours of play for your one bet, you know? And that's what happens with sports betting is the games take about 3 hours to play out, and you sit there and you have your wager that whole time, and you know, maybe you get a free drink in addition to your wager. Anthony Curtis has always said that sports betting's probably the best low roller play when it comes to being in a casino is because your wager lasts so long before it's resolved. So I want to encourage people to get involved in sports betting and look at it as if they don't feel they have an edge, then to find ways to trim the house edge against them. Another topic was five ways to work smarter, not harder. So in other words, a lot of people take the approach of sports betting and they just put too much time and effort into it when there's a lot of shortcuts they could be taking when it came to their approach. This week I did five mistakes that bettors make when handicapping sports. So in other words, we all know five mistakes that people make when, associated with sports betting. They buy picks or they follow the wrong people or they chase their losses. But what about the people that are actually handicapping sports? In other words, they're coming up with their own line. Well, these are five mistakes that they make. And number one actually was believing that you can handicap sports effectively. Because truthfully, a lot of people, they see sports betting and they go, okay, I got to come up with a line on Tampa Bay versus Detroit, and I got to come, you know, and they go way too deep into it, when really maybe the better way to approach it for them was over under the number of completions that Tom Brady will have in the game. That seems to be a better approach for a lot of people when it comes to the amount of time and effort that they're realistically willing to put into the product. So I'm going to keep going with these. I've got a list of pages long of these topics, and I think this is good for the bettors. And to be honest, I took my cue from Colin Jones with Blackjack Apprenticeship. He puts out videos on YouTube that are very basic. If you're a card counter, you already know these things, but he's reinforcing it, and he's sort of drawing in a bigger audience by coming up with topics that are relatable to people and take away the intimidation factor when it comes to counting cards. Well, I'm doing the same thing. I'm trying to take away the intimidation factor when it comes to betting sports.
So it seems that creating a line and beating sports that way is tremendously difficult. Do you not think a better approach for people who are trying to win would be focusing on shopping the lines and actually finding an edge that way? I mean, is it easier to get an edge big enough to win that way than it is trying to actually handicap?
Absolutely, Richard. In fact, in my last video, I gave the example of a money tree. And you can be standing there looking at a money tree and you say, wow, I just got to pick the money off, right? Well, the low-hanging fruit is going to be easier to get to than the stuff at the top. And the stuff at the top is like handicapping the NFL. The stuff at the bottom is playing promos at sports books or looking at lines at a sharp sports book and comparing them to another book that you have money at, where you see a difference. You can play it at an inferior number at, or sorry, a superior number at the, you know, the squarer book. You can pick off prop bets and things like that. Now, these aren't things for everyone because it's very hard to scale yourself upward if you're focusing on these little things like picking off bad lines or picking off props or picking off promos. There's a limit there. There's a cap. There's a ceiling. And the bettors realize as they get bigger and better at their handicapping, they need to branch into things that are more sustainable, such as betting into major sports and betting sides and totals. So for the beginning bettor, yes, I encourage them to pick off all these little things as best they can. But for longer term bettors, they know immediately that there's no way that they can possibly sustain themselves with the low-hanging fruit.
But about the low-hanging fruit, such as promotions, when I heard your talk on that, I related it to video poker, which is the curse of my life, I suppose. And you were making a valid point that if you always play the promotions and only play the promotions, pretty soon the books are going to tire of your action, especially if you're good. And absolutely, that's true in video poker as well. Some of the gambling knowledge that you get from your show is exactly the same as what Richard and I are talking about in gambling and other games, which is probably exactly the same as success at pruning orchids or cooking a meal for 12 people. There's certain keys to success in life which are pretty constant across genres.
Yeah, you know, one point I made was that there's the science of sports betting and there's the art of sports betting. And I think I've made that point on your show before. And playing promos is largely just taking the science of sports betting. There's positive EV promos. I'm going to play them. Getting away with it for a while is the art of sports betting. So yes, almost all sports books will grow tired of your action if you're just playing promos. But hopefully this is boosting up your bankroll enough that you can get into bigger things down the line. Maybe you're boosting up your bankroll so you can go card counting. You know, playing promos at online sports books and online casinos could be enough to, you know, put together a few thousand dollars that you can then take to your card counting endeavor. So, you know, it's all sort of kind of just playing the cycle of games around. I mean, I still play video poker, Bob. I still go to casinos and try to win. I just don't focus on sports betting. sports betting is just another arrow in the quiver, so to speak.
Do you have any idea how long you'll be able to come up with new products, new things to talk about?
I don't see it ending because there's always a different way to kind of say these things, and there's always a new audience to reach. I've got some video ideas that I know are going to be huge, and I'm kind of saving them for when I get a more of a diverse audience. So right now, my audience is largely people that have found me from Twitter, probably people that are going to find me from this podcast. I want to kind of branch out a little bit, see if I get a bigger following. And I've got some video ideas that I think are going to be great. I also want to improve my production quality. That's I think, the biggest differentiator when it comes to YouTube is production quality. So you can say anything, but if you say it in a pretty way, you get a lot bigger audience than if you say it with a webcam that's pointed up your nose and with a ceiling in the background. You know, it's a lot tougher to get your point across when the scene looks somewhat amateurish.
Or you could become a pretty girl. That would help your viewing numbers.
Yeah.
Well, more guests too, right? You can always, if you can get guests, that's another way to vary the content. So.
Exactly. They bring in their own audiences. Yes, I agree.
Some of your shows have been pretty technical, like how to scrape numbers off of the internet. And most aren't technical. How do you come up with the mix between when you're going to get technical and when you're going to be not so technical?
So what I've been doing, Bob, is I've been trying to kind of spray the field as much as possible. And you'll notice that if you look through the topics, the five ways videos, the five things to do, or five, they're largely for a recreational audience or an audience that's just getting into sports betting. And then I have some topics that are more geared towards smaller audiences. For instance, I gave a talk on tax and retirement strategies for APs or for gamblers in general. That was very targeted, and I didn't actually think that audience would be large at all, but I've gotten some great feedback on that. People said, oh, I've never heard people talk about this. And to be honest with you, a lot of that show was me saying, you know, look up Russell Fox, because Russell Fox is the authority on a lot of this, and check with him. I did one on the state of the states, where I went through all the states and where they stood with sports betting, the good, the bad, and the ugly. In fact, I used a kind of a Clint Eastwood theme through the whole thing, because, you know, that has some appeal to people, but it's not a broad range appeal. But it was one of these things, you know, maybe that's the industry people that'll want to see what's going on in other states so they can kind of plan their expansion. So, yeah, definitely right now, Bob, I am looking to pull in as diverse an audience as I possibly can, and we're going to go from there. And maybe in the future it's going to narrow down to a more set demographic. But for right now, I'm just kind of each week, it could appeal to a different flavor.
Well, the quality is very high, a quality of information. We wish you nothing but the best. People who are listening to us when we post it on Thursday, for sure you want to listen tomorrow to the Ed Miller, David Au one. But if you don't get it live and you get it after the fact, well, the lecture is still going to be out there, and you'll hear the questions that somebody else asked, and which is almost as valuable as you being there to ask your questions live. So... Richard and I both very highly recommend listening to what he has to say if you have any interest at all in sports. We thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate this, and I hope your audience sees that I'm definitely looking to help people gamble with an edge when it comes to sports betting. So hopefully there's a crossover here.
Very good. Thank you, and thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.